We're here with author of Shot Down, the true story of pilot Howard Snyder and the crew of the B-17, Susan Ruth. He's a past president of the 306 Bomb Group Historic Association, and he has also been also involved with a number of organizations, and his books have been featured at the National World War II Museum in New Orleans, National Museum of U.S. Air Force in Dayton, Ohio, also National Museum of the 8th Air Force in Wheeler, Georgia, and just basically just knows a lot about planes and lives the story to tell about the B-17 Susan Ruth. So live, ladies and gentlemen, from sunny California, flying in, ladies and gentlemen, Steve Snyder. Steve, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's glad to have you on. So you're the author of the book, Shot Down, the true story of pilot Howard Snyder and the crew of the B-17 Susan Ruth. You're also the past president of the 306 Bomb Group Historic Association, and you also had your book sold at quite a few national museums, and you just, you know, lived through a very interesting period, and you also have been through a memorial, and just a really interesting story on what life is like on the base, and just simply, you know, talking about the story back in February 8th, 1944. And before we get to all that, tell us how I got started.
On writing the book?
We'll talk about you first, how you got started as a pilot.
Oh, well, I'm not a pilot.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So go ahead. Just tell us how you got started.
Yeah, my dad, after he came back from the war, he never flew again. So I wasn't exposed to aviation. So I didn't become a pilot. But now I'm around warbirds, World War II planes all the time. Well, not this year. But usually I go all around the United States attending air shows, signing copies of my book, and I do a lot of presentations, PowerPoint presentations, at different sorts of organizations. But all that's kind of been canceled this year with the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, growing up, I knew the basics of my dad's World War II history. I knew he was a B-17 pilot. He was stationed in England with the 8th Air Force, and he flew bombing missions over Europe. And on February 8th of 1944, as you mentioned, his plane, the Susan Ruth, he named his plane after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas.
Uh-huh.
And on February 8th of 44, his plane was attacked by two German fighters. It was shot down. And two of the crew were killed in the plane. A B-17 had a 10-man crew. The other eight bailed out, and after my dad bailed out, he was missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded capture and eventually got back to England.
Mm-hmm.
So that, but it wasn't until I retired from 2009 that I really had the time to delve into my dad's war history in more detail. My career was in sales and sales management. I have had no background in writing or any training whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
But I just started doing a lot of research, and 3 years into my research, I just came to the conclusion that the story of my dad and his crew was so unique and so compelling that people needed to know about it and read about it. So I decided to write a book.
That is amazing, too. And of course, it's on Amazon right now. It's a number one bestseller and recipient of more than 25 national book awards. And of course, you know, your father was knocked out of the sky by German fighters, and So during that time of 7 months that your dad was missing in action, so maybe just a little bit about how he managed to survive, what was like, or also what was life like on the base as well as in London and the England countryside as well.
Okay, yeah, there. When I was after I retired, I had no intention of writing a book at first. I just wanted to go through all the material that my parents had kept after the war, and they kept a lot of information. And there were two items that were really significant. One was a diary that my dad wrote while he was missing in action about his plane being shot down, which is absolutely riveting. And the other was all the letters that my dad wrote to my mother while he was stationed in England before he got shot down. And reading those letters was just fascinating, because my dad was very candid in what he wrote in those letters. He wrote about flying combat missions were like, what life was like on the base, what life was like in England and London at the time, escapades of him and his crew, and That's how I really got hooked, from all those letters that my dad wrote. That was an interesting time, you know. After Pearl Harbor, on December 7th of 1944, the U.S. was at war, and you know, all these young guys started volunteering, and so the military was made up of real young guys, citizen soldiers, as they were called. These guys were in their late teens or early 20s. And, you know, back then, the U.S. was a lot different country. It was very rural back then. Everyone lived out in the country. A lot of these guys hadn't even been out of their hometown or county. And all of a sudden, they were halfway around the world fighting a war. Here they are, you know, these guys in the 8th Air Force, you know, they're going from this little, you know, farm town in Iowa or Pennsylvania, wherever they are. And now they're in London, you know, which is, at that time was the most vibrant city in the world. And, you know, they'd never been away from home before, never been away from their family, from their mother. And all of a sudden, they could do anything they wanted to do. You know, they could drink, they could smoke, they could chase women. So it was a very exciting time for these guys before they actually got into the thick of the battle. And then, yeah, they had a rude awakening of the terror and the horrors of combat is like.
Uh-huh. And also, too, like with your dad, you know, being in London as well, too. What was his personal description of London and what were his initial thoughts like, you know, comparing to the United States and lifestyle and. Or like you said about the drinking, the pubs and, you know, people, culture, food and everything like that. Maybe just a brief details about his thoughts on London, you know, comparing to you back home in the United States.
Well, you know, England was a lot different from the U.S. They were much more proper and formal in how they approached life. And these young GIs and airmen, you know, they were footloose and fancy free. They were well paid. They had access to cigarettes and nylons and chocolate. So they were a big hit with the English girls back there. My dad was married. I had a little baby girl, Susan Ruth. He was a dedicated Christian. So, but he said that these guys, they could get anything they wanted back then. They were all the British men were off at, you know, fighting in the war. And so you had all these U.S. GIs there, and they had a good time with the English girls. London had been bombed. They had gone through the Blitz. So a lot of it was destroyed of the city. And then at night there were blackouts. And my dad said when he'd go into London, you couldn't see a thing. He would get lost all the time.
Because
there were no lights whatsoever, but they would find these pubs or kind of speakeasies that were open after curfew. And it was fun. And it was sightseeing. They saw all these historic places, you know, if they were on leave during the day, like St. Paul's Cathedral and Westminster Abbey and all these places like that. So it was an exciting time. And they'd go in to the little towns near the base to the various little pubs. Where they go drink and try to forget all the horrors of flying combat missions.
Mm-hmm. That is amazing as well, too. And we'll talk more about the book and also maybe a little play-by-play on how this all happened. But first, listen to The Mike Wagner Show at themikewagnershow.com. We're here with author Steve Snyder, The True Story of a Pilot, Howard Snyder, and a crew of the B-17 Soothing Route, now available on Amazon here on The Mike Wagner Show. And I noticed you have a picture of it as well, too, on your left shoulder next to a tiki mug you were talking about earlier, as I say, in the pre-show. So maybe just tell us about the photograph and where your dad's at. Maybe just talk a little about the picture, and especially the crew.
Yeah, I'll show it up. I guess you can see that okay.
Yes,
I mentioned, my dad had our B-17 had a 10-man crew. They had four officers that are kneeling in front here. My dad was the pilot. He's kneeling here on, I'm pointing to him. Uh-huh. And he was the first pilot, and as such, he was the commander of the plane and the crew. That's why he was able to name the plane. And then they had six enlisted men who were mainly gunners up here. This is their crew picture. Every B-17 crew took a picture in front of a B-17. That's not the Susan Ruth. That's just the a plane that they took their crew picture in front of why they were there. Mm-hmm. So the book's just not about my dad, but it's about what happened to each member of the crew, because something different happened to each guy. Five of them made it for home, but five of them did not. Mm-hmm. And then it's also about all the courageous Belgian people that risked their lives trying to help them.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And of course, you know, having a shot down Belgian and they came to rescue. And I guess you kind of wonder was, you know, what was like the first impressions of the Belgian people, and what were they like back in 1944 compared to today?
Well, they were amazing people. They really saved my dad's life. And it was very, very dangerous for any Belgian person to help downed Allied airmen, because Belgium was occupied by the Nazis at that time. So if the German secret police, the Gestapo, found out that they were helping Allied airmen or any of the Allied soldiers, they would be arrested, tortured, and either sent to a concentration camp or shot. And some of the people who did help my dad and other members of his crew did meet that fate. So they were wonderful people. I've been to Belgium 6 times.
Wow.
During my research. And even today, the Belgian people are still so thankful and so grateful for the American soldiers and the Allies coming to rescue them from 4 years of Nazi oppression and Nazi occupation. And when you talk to the Belgian people back then and so forth, they go, gosh, they're risking their lives. But then they also say, well, those U.S. airmen, they're risking their lives to come liberate us. So the least we can do is try to, you know, help them. Normally when airmen were shot down and the underground came across them, they tried to get them back to England through various escape routes, down through France, over the Pyrenees into Spain, and then out through British-controlled Gibraltar. But something always went wrong trying to get my dad out. They could never get him into these escape routes, either because they were compromised, infiltrated by you know, German spies, or some of the people in these escape routes, you know, were killed. And so it was a very dangerous time to be a soldier or an airman shot down in an occupied country trying to hide and escape the Germans.
Mm-hmm. And of course, this is all in the 7 months as well, too. And you you said the book is not just about your dad, but also five of the men that survived and five didn't. And maybe you can talk about a couple that did survive and a couple that didn't. So you can just, you know, go to one at a time, and you can go about probably the most amazing story that a person did survive or two, or a story that, you know, was amazing, but then that didn't survive.
Yes, well, three of the eight who bailed out, they were captured immediately by the Germans, and they became prisoners of war. Two of the men, waist gunner Joe Musial and bombardier Richard Daniels, they were injured so severely that they were repatriated back to the U.S. Before the war was over. And then the other member of my dad's crew that was captured, became a POW, was Roy Holbert, who was the flight engineer, and he spent the remainder of the war from February 8th until the end of the war in Europe in May of 45. And he had an amazing story. He was involved in the 86-day Black March, which was a terrible ordeal. My dad evaded capture, and another one of his crewmen, Bill Schlenker, evaded capture. But they had totally different experiences. After my dad bailed out, he came down into some trees and he was dangling 20 feet off the ground and couldn't get down.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
Fortunately for him, a couple of young Belgian men came to his rescue before the Germans got there. His plane was shot down in the early afternoon. So once they helped him down out of the tree, they told him to stay put and hide because they thought it was too dangerous to try to move him during the daylight with German patrols combing the area. So that night they came back and got him and took him to the Durvan farmhouse. The two Belgian men were Raymond Durvan and Henri Franken. He stayed there one night. And then after that, he was moved from place to place to place. How long he stayed in any given house, depending on how brave the people were who lived there and how dangerous the Belgium underground thought it was for him to stay there. He might stay one night. He might say, 6 weeks. So he was moved all over the place, as opposed to Bill Schlenker. He stayed the whole time with one woman and her two daughters in Chimay and at their house. So they were totally different circumstances.
Oh, my goodness. And of course, and of course, Sumi had to learn the Belgian language as well, too. That's what it sounded like. So and did you pick up any Belgian by any chance from your dad, or maybe he taught you a little bit of Belgian? I just want to throw it out there.
Well, Belgium's a unique country. It's kind of divided in two. The northern half of Belgium is called Flanders, where they speak Dutch.
Uh-huh.
And the southern portion of Belgium is called Wallonia, where they speak French.
Huh.
So my dad and the plane and the guys that were able to bail out, they came down right at the French-Belgium border. Actually, my dad and the plane came down in Belgium, and the other guys who bailed out came down in France. So they were right at the border. So everyone spoke French around that area. And of course, when my dad first bailed out, he couldn't speak any French. He had a little French-English dictionary he could refer to. But one of the places he stayed at for a lengthy period of time, there was a next-door neighbor called Mimi Gabriel. Her name was Mimi Gabriel, who was 16 years old, and she could speak English. And so she would play cards and Monopoly and do crossword puzzles with my dad, and she taught him to speak conversational French.
Okay.
I shouldn't really say I can speak. I took French in high school, and I know a lot of words, but I really can't speak it very well.
It's perfectly okay. I can know a few, but we don't. I think we'll have to do it another time. We'll have to take up some French, and we'll have to do this in French as well, too. And hopefully, you know, do this interview in French, and maybe some people in Belgium can pick it up. So, and of course, 1989, according to Shutdown, via book from Amazon here, The Mike Wagner Show, a memorial to the crew of the Susan Ruth was dedicated at Mackinois, Belgium. Did I say it right? M-A-C-Q-U-E?
Mackinois.
Mackinois. Okay. So, yeah. And every year it's been held to honor and remember the men, and it's also duty to remember. So that's been going on in 1989. So what would you probably say during that time was a little more emotional than usual, like say 1990 or even 2000 or whenever?
Well, like most World War II veterans, my dad didn't talk a lot about the war until 1989 when that memorial was built. And he and the other three crew members that were living at the time went over for the dedication of the memorial. And there he was reunited with all these Belgian people that hit him during the war, revisited these places where he was hidden, and that brought it all back, and he started talking about it after that. And then 5 years later, in 1994, I made my first trip to Belgium. My wife and I accompanied my parents to the 50th anniversary of the liberation of Belgium and of my dad's plane being shot down, and that's when it became personal for me, because I saw these places firsthand and actually met a couple of his helpers at that time. And as I mentioned, since then, I've been to Belgium five times, and I've made some lifelong friends there.
We're here with author Steve Snyder, the true story of the pilot Howard Snyder and the crew of the B-17, Susan Ruth, here on the Mike Wagner Show. And you're also past president of the 306th Bomb Group Historical Association. Tell us all about that group.
Sure. Well, my dad was in the 306th Bomb Group. In the 8th Air Force Station in England, at the peak, there were about 40 different bomb groups located in an area called East Anglia, which is about the size of Vermont. And these air bases were located only about 5 to 10 miles apart. The 306 base was at Thurlow, England, which is about 60 miles north of London.
Mm-hmm.
And after I retired, I joined the 306 Bomb Group Historical Association, became a member, and then became a board member, and then served as president of the association. We have annual meetings, reunions every year at different cities around the country. And it's our mission to remember, honor, and educate, to remember the air war over Europe, to honor the men who fought it, and to educate the public about it, especially younger generations. You know, World War II ended 75 years ago, and that's a long time ago, and it's kind of fading in people's memories, and it's our mission, and it's my mission. It's why I do these air shows and do a lot of public speaking, is to keep the memory alive and to educate the public about what these young, brave men went through and the sacrifices they made to ensure that freedom was restored and maintained, and that we can enjoy all the freedoms that we have today. You know, there's a lot of younger generations that don't realize, you know, how lucky they are to have the freedom that they are, but it came at a high price and a cost.
And also, too, and getting back to the training of the pilots as well, too, how much training was required to be a pilot in the Air Force back then?
Well, it was pilot training was real tough. There was three stages of pilot training, primary, basic, and advanced. And 40% of the men who started pilot training washed out. It was very difficult, you know, both physically and mentally. To be a pilot, you had to learn aerodynamics and physics and meteorology. So there was a lot of book learning to do then. And then, of course, you had to learn and how to fly a plane and be a good pilot. So there was various guys that would flunk out along the way. My dad went into the Army to begin with as a result of the first peacetime draft in U.S. history in the fall of 1940. My dad went into the Army in the spring of 1941. He was stationed at Fort Lewis, Washington. But then he married my mother, Ruth Hempel, and then they had a baby on the way, and he didn't think he could support him very well on a private's pay in the Army. So he volunteered for the Air Force in 1942 to go through pilot training. And if he could make it through pilot training, become an officer, he'd be making a lot more money and then be able to better support his family. But he graduated from pilot training in April of 1943. And then he went to transitional training, where he learned how to fly a four-engine B-17 bomber. Then after that, he went to operational crew training down in Texas, where the various members of the crew came together and they learned to operate as a team. And then once they were deemed ready, they were assigned overseas to the European Theater of Operations, where they reported to the 306 Bomb Group on October 21st of 1943.
Wow, that is something. And of course, it took a lot of courage to fly over and everything else. And I guess my question is that if you were to become a pilot, would you be able to fly like what your dad did, or say – with I'm trying how to put this. I mean, it's just fascinating. I have to say this, like, you know, could you imagine yourself being a pilot like your dad?
Well, I've, you know, been up in little small planes, just me and the pilot. And now I kind of wish I had have learned to fly, because it is fun. But it's one thing to fly just general aviation for fun, and it's a whole another thing, you know, to fly when you're getting shot at and guys are getting killed. You know, back then those B-17 bombers, they were, back then you really had to fly the plane. Yeah, today you have computers that do most of the flying, and it took a lot of stamina to fly. I mean, it took muscle. If they flew in tight formations with all these bombers in close proximity to one another, so they had to stay alert at all times, or else they could clip a wing on the plane next to them or run into the plane in front of them and go down. Also, these combat missions lasted 6 to 10 hours. So it was very fatiguing, both mentally and physically, to just to try to control that plane. So that's why they had two pilots, a first pilot, my dad, and then a co-pilot, so they could trade off flying the plane on these missions. So one could get a little rest. And then it was the conditions in those planes were horrible. Those planes weren't pressurized, so above 10,000 feet, they had to go on oxygen or else they'd pass out and soon die. Also, it was extremely cold at the altitude that they flew, again, because the planes weren't pressurized. It was minus 40 to 60 degrees below zero in those planes. So frostbite was a huge problem, and there were a lot of airmen who suffered serious frostbite injuries. One of my dad's waist gunners was in the hospital for 2.5 months because at that altitude. So that's before, you know, they even got attacked by German aircraft or anti-aircraft fire and all that. So being a There were 26,000 men in the 8th Air Force who died, which was more than the entire Marine Corps fighting in the Pacific.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. There was another 28,000 men that who became prisoners of war after their planes were knocked out of the sky. Being a combat crewman in the 8th Air Force during World War II was the most hazardous duty assignment in the United States military.
That is amazing, and your dad lived to tell about it. And is there any other highlights you would like to share about your dad and the crew of the B-17, Susan Ruth? Is there something that we haven't covered as of yet?
Well, there are a couple things. One thing about my dad is that after a while, he got frustrated because, you know, he couldn't get into these escape routes. And it was very stressful for him because, you know, after all, his plane was attacked, it's on fire, he has to bail out, comes in a foreign country, has no idea where he is, doesn't know what happened to his other buddies on the crew, can't communicate with the U.S. military. He's being helped by total strangers. Anyone could be a collaborator and turn him over to the Gestapo. And there are several instances that are described in the book of him almost getting discovered. But finally, he got tired of hiding. Word came on that the Allies landed on Normandy on D-Day, June 6th of 44, and he wanted to get back in the fight. Unlike most airmen, he had that year's experience in the infantry, so he knew how to fight on the ground. So he decided to join the French Resistance. And he joined the French Resistance. They were made up of small guerrilla groups, independent guerrilla groups, located all across France. And they harassed the Germans. They would attack convoys, sabotage railway lines, disrupt communication, assassinate German officers. And he fought with the French Resistance for a couple months, risking his life. Not only could he have been killed in the fighting, but if he had been captured by the Germans, he would have been shot on the spot as a terrorist. So that was unbelievably brave. I don't know how many other people would have risked doing that, because he could have just stayed hunkered down and waited for the U.S. troops and armies to come up through France after D-Day. But he thought it was his duty to get back in and fight for his country. So that took a lot of guts to do that.
I was going to say, joining a French resistance like that, wouldn't that be considered treason?
Well, no, because he was still fighting for the Allies.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Yeah, he was still fighting with the Allies. And there's a number of instances in the book of him of encounters that is the resistance group, they were called the Mackie, had with the Germans that are pretty fascinating. And 7 months after his plane was shot down, word came that the U.S. Army or U.S. troops were in a little nearby village of Trelon, France. So he walked into town and the town square, walked up to an army major. Actually, it was element of Patton's Third Army.
Huh, interesting.
And identified himself. And then he hopped a ride on a convoy taking German prisoners to Paris. And then from Paris, got back to England.
Wow, that is amazing. And then from England onto the United States. And was that a smooth sailing one, or how much adventure did he have to go through that?
Well, no, that was a smooth sailing one. He just went back on a ship. That the Air Force had a rule then that if you were shot down over occupied territory and helped by the underground, that you couldn't go back and fly combat, because they thought that if you were shot down a second time, captured by the Germans and tortured, that you'd give up the identity of the people who helped you the first time you were shot down. The only exception to that I'm aware of is Chuck Yeager, the fighter pilot, who personally met with General Eisenhower and talked him into letting him go back into combat.
Oh, good old Chuck Yeager. He knows how to get it done. And could you imagine your dad talking to General Patton? I think that would have been historic.
Well, yeah, he didn't meet Patton, but there was this Third Army was a big organization. So he was sent back to the States and he became a B-17 flight instructor for the remainder of the war.
Oh, interesting. That's a good way to end the whole battle as well, too. That is fantastic. Once again, author Steve Snyder, The True Story of Pilot Howard Snyder and the Crew of the B-17, Susan Ruth. You can get on Amazon, The Mike Wagner Show. A big thank you for your time. And just a few more things, Steve. I forgot to ask you earlier, Who do you consider your favorite writers and authors as well, too, since Uwehin wrote the book?
Oh, gosh. I never thought of that. I've read a lot of books, especially about – I always like to read. Before I retired, I'd read a lot of, mystery, crime novels, things like that. Since I started my research, I've read book after book after book about World War II and the air war over Europe. I really couldn't say I have one favorite. Tell you the truth, I had.
Mm-hmm. Do you know of any movies that have come out like that with the B-17 Susan Ruth, or is there any stories out there that were similar to it?
Well, several things along those lines. Yes, there's a movie, the Memphis Belle, and the documentary, the Memphis Belle.
Oh, yes.
Are two good movies. The War Lover, starring Steve McQueen, is another good 8th Air Force movie. And another one, Command. I forget the exact title of that. But actually today, the 21st, National Geographic is having a tribute, the Memorial Day tribute to World War II, and they're showing for like all day and all night films, and there's one about the 8th Air Force called Heroes of the Mighty 8th Air Force or something like that. But it's on the National Geographic channel, so I encourage your listeners to if they're listening to this today, the 21st, which they probably won't be, they could listen to it there. And then there hasn't been any movie made about the Susan Ruth, although I did recently finish a short 13-minute documentary short that I've entered into a number of film festivals. And so far it's been selected by 11. And in the 5 festivals that it's shown, it's won 4 awards. So that's nice.
That is very nice. And what are your upcoming plans for 2020 and beyond?
Well, like I say, normally I keep real busy traveling all over the place, but with the coronavirus, everything's getting canceled this year. I'd hope to go to some of these film festivals as well, but they're mostly just streaming unless they're later in the year that they maybe I can get to them. But it's just to continue, what I've been doing, speaking and going to air shows. I miss those. One last thing I'll mention before we go is probably the most exciting thing that happened to me while I was researching the book and writing the book is that I found the German Luftwaffe pilot that shot down my dad's plane and interviewed him for the book.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that something? He must have been willing to talk about it. Sounded interested.
Yeah, and coincidentally, the gunners of my dad's plane shot him down the same time he shot my dad down. They shot each other down. Isn't that something?
What a coincidence. How often does that happen?
Yeah, how often does that happen? And fortunately for me, he became a translator after the war, so he speaks perfect English. And he gave me some wonderful insight that's in the book about what it was like to go up against the 8th Air Force and we become friends. He's still alive. He's the only person in the shot down story who's still living. He's 96 years old. Hans Berger is his name. He lives in Munich, Germany. And like I say, we've become friends.
That is amazing. And once again, author Steve Snyder, the book called Shot Down, The True Story of Pilot Howard Snyder and the Crew of the B-17, Susan Ruth. You can check it on Amazon. Steve, a big thank you for your time. You've been fantastic. Looking forward to having you again soon. And once again, tell us where you can find the book and also your website and how can people contact you?
Okay. Well, most people get the book on Amazon, like you stated. But if they want to go to my website, they can order a personally signed autograph book. My website is stevesnyderauthor.com. That's Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R. stevesnyderauthor.com. And there's a lot of information on my website. It's just not about my book. But there's a ton of information about World War II, the air war over Europe, the 8th Air Force. There's interviews with veterans, lots of videos, links to the research site. So if someone's interested in learning more about the air war over Europe, they can learn it on the website. And then you can leave me a message on my website, or you can email me at steve@stevesnyderauthor.com. And then I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook and you know, all the usual social media.
Sounds great. Once again, Steve, a big thank you for your time. You've been fantastic. Learned a lot from you. Looking forward to having you again soon. Do us a favor. Keep this up to date. Looking forward to have back on sometime in 2020. You've been great.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure. It's been fun. Thanks again.